Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz, and Zach Graham.
Presented by the FTN Network.
Bringing you the analysis you need on breaking news, betting markets, and your fantasy lineups.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the FTN NBA Podcast. Tuesday, January 18th, time of recording. You are probably listening on Wednesday, January 19th. Joe Metz, your host, as always, joined by my good friends, Zach Graham, Kweisenberg DFS, and Adam Pfeiffer, resident Bills fan. Zach, you had a rough weekend. You had your wisdom teeth pulled, your heart pulled out, even in a game that you weren't expecting to win. How are you holding up?
Yeah, man, it was definitely much worse to get the teeth pulled out than the Steelers season pulled out from under me. I mean, you know, didn't expect to be there. Certainly wanted them to win the game. And yeah. I would be lying if I said I didn't get a glimmer of hope when TJ Watt took that fumble back to the house and they went up 7-0. At least I thought they would, you know, compete into the third quarter at that point. And then, then Patrick Mahomes said no. But yeah, I mean, Roethlisberger, obviously I'm not a fan of him off the field, but have enjoyed, his exploits on the field for almost two decades now. And just, nobody knew that they were tuning into an NFL podcast here, but I'm going to give you 30 seconds, Joe, because you tried to take a shot at my franchise quarterback in the run sheet. So just to let you know, the top six quarterback of all time, 15-1 in his rookie year, offensive rookie of the year. He made six Pro Bowls. He was the player of the week 18 times. He's fifth all time in passing yards, eighth all time in touchdown passes, 16th in all time passer rating, second in game winning drives, third in comeback victories with three Super Bowl appearances, two Super Bowl wins, one of 12 humans with multiple Super Bowl wins. His career comparisons on Football Reference are John Elway, Warren Moon, Dan Marino, Joe Montana, Terry Bradshaw, Drew Bledsoe, Fran Tarkenton, and Eli Manning. He also holds the record for most times sacked. So it makes sense why this big fat guy cannot move at his age this season, has been sacked the most times in history. So great career, Ben Roethlisberger, and I hope you continue to be an exemplary member of our society after your career is over, and hopefully all that bullshit is in the past. Don't get on a motorcycle. Don't go to the nightclub. Enough said about that.
So the one thing I will say, can he not move because he was sacked so much, or was he sacked so much because he cannot move?
I think both ways are true. Yeah,
to be fair, in his prime, he wasn't like evading. He was, remember, he would stiff arm defenders.
He also wasn't Tom Brady immobile.
No,
I agree. So I'll pass it, Adam.
Hold on, wait.
Fan of a much more mobile.
Yeah, you did not just say Ben is a top six quarterback of all time, did you?
All time.
Yeah, you're out of your mind.
name six better quarterbacks.
Get this man on Fade the Chalk.
Dude, you're out of your mind.
Name him.
All right. Brady.
Aaron Rodgers.
Rodgers. Mm-hmm. Manning. Breeze. That's.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, dude.
He's got one title.
So does Ben.
How many? He has two.
Oh, he has two. That's right. I forgot I forgot he got the Seahawks one. God, I don't want to talk. I don't want to listen. Can we? Let's just talk about.
Okay, let's go, Josh Allen. Oh, the Cavaliers. Oh,
I want to get to the basketball. I just want to say, I've told this to everybody. If the Bills win on Sunday, if they go into Arrowhead and win, they're winning the Super Bowl. And I'll just leave it at that.
I mean, they're winning the AFC. I'll give you that. But they're not beating the Packers. Anyways, let's get to the basketball. Good talk. So we are going to be a quicker podcast today, running through some mid-season awards. We're going to do the traditional end-of-year awards, MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, Most Improved Coach of the Year, Rookie of the Year. And we added our own, not an award, but just the disappointment of the season so far, can be a team or a player. We will hold that and MVP for last. Before we dive in, if you have not signed up for FTN Daily, specifically the NBA DFS package, promo code FTNTV gets you 15% off of not the first month, every single month if you opt for monthly or your entire annual package, if that is the route you choose to go. Get access to the Discord, paywalled streams, paywalled articles, paywalled tools, including Advanced DVP, Stefano's Baby, our NBA Splits tool, which gives you both the option to sort team or player stats with another player off the court or not playing in the game as a whole, and much, much more. Kyle's ownership projections, a new and updated NBA Optimizer, which will feature late swap functionality as of today, if you are listening on Wednesday, January 19th. So big things continuing to come for the FTN NBA team. So let's dive in to the NBA. There are a couple chalk awards right now. We're going to breeze by these very quickly. Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, and Rookie of the Year. These three, for Defensive Player of the Year, we all agree is Draymond Green, who is the betting favorite. Rookie of the Year, Evan Mobley, the betting favorite, we all agreed as well. And so same with Sixth Man of the Year, Tyler Hero, the betting favorite and the chalk of choice for us. I think each of us can maybe hit on like one thing per player, but I tweeted about it a few days ago. I think top 10 is a lock, potentially top five. When you look at players, most impactful players to their team when they're out of the game versus in the game, Draymond Green at the very worst is top 10. Golden State with him active this year, 100.27 defensive rating. That is one of the best in the NBA. That drops to 106.1 with him out. Their plus minus of nearly 8, it's 7.93 with him active, drops to minus 2.44 with him out. They go from allowing just under 102 points per game to just under 109 points per game. Obviously affects both sides of the ball, facilitates the offense and ball movement, but his impact defensively is arguably the best in the NBA or the biggest in the NBA. Does anybody, do you guys agree? Do you have any qualms with that take?
No. Right. There's
we knew Adam was getting his nut off about Draymond today. So
dude, Draymond's just a good basketball player.
No, I agree.
And like,
except he shoots like he looks like he's wearing a backpack, but yeah.
There's always been this like.
I'm sorry.
is that accurate? Is that the most accurate?
I've never heard that, and that is perfect. Oh my god! Sorry.
No, it was good. I feel like there's been for a lot of fans or anybody that watches the NBA this conception. He blocks shots. He's 7 feet tall. Rudy Gobert is the best defensive player in the league, and he's just not like. It's been Draymond because he can cover 1 through 5, and it's been Draymond because he's the smartest defender in he's one of the smartest players in basketball. So yeah, I mean, Draymond, I think I saw opponents are shooting 41.5% when he's defending, that shot attempt or defended field goal percentage, like, which is, one of the better marks in the league among qualified players. He is going to miss 2 weeks at least now. He's dealing with that calf injury. So, This could impact things, and we could see Rudy Gobert win the award again. Giannis is always in consideration for that award. In all honesty, they won't win it, and they're going to win other awards, but both power forward and centers in Cleveland legitimately have a case too. But this is Draymond's award. Draymond's the GOAT.
Yep. Zach, do you have any take or anything you want to spew on Tyler Hero for Sixth Man or Evan Mobley for Rookie of the Year before we pass it to... And we are going to hard cap Adam at 30 seconds for Evan Mobley.
I mean, we'll let the man drop the cum bucket on the pod, about Evan Mobley. No, I don't.
This is getting out of hand.
I mean, hey, on the night that Jonathan Kuminga is getting the start, I think the cum bucket reference is timely. Nothing much to add, really. I think, I guess the only thing to add to both of you guys talking about Dre is that you mentioned he's going to be out, obviously, and has been in and out of the lineup over the last couple weeks as well. Warriors are struggling already without him, 4-6 over their last 10. So you're already seeing the negative effect of him being out on their record now, 3 games back. And then you mentioned Tyler Hero just running away with the Sixth Man of the Year award. I think, minus 300 currently?
Yeah, he was so... By the third week of the season, he was like minus 150 with the next closest player at like plus 800. I have never seen in my years betting, I've never seen someone run away with an end of season award that quickly. Mm-hmm. But you can argue he's been the Heat's best player this season.
Sure. And I think one thing that's helped him, Joe, is that some guys that could have maybe competed for, I think he would still be a pretty large favorite. But guys like Jalen Brunson and your guy Bobby Portis, who Jordan I think Poole would have everyone. Are having strong seasons, but yep. they've started so much that
they don't qualify.
They're not yeah. really yeah, they're not really six yeah. men this season. So it's wild how sitting here mid January, we're just like, yeah, this is locked up, Tyler Hero.
It's like Jordan Clarkson last year. It was the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, good point.
So Adam, bring us home with the rookie of the year. Just do your thing.
So we obviously follow basketball very closely. Joe, you know this. I just want everybody to know, upon this recording, January 18th, 2022, the Cleveland Cavaliers have a better record than the defending champion Milwaukee Bucks. Evan Mobley, huge reason why. But in all seriousness, I mean, what he's done playing, we didn't think there were a lot of questions, right? There were questions how the fit would be with Jared Allen and if Kevin Love would start or if Kevin Love would come off the bench. And then when we got the starting five with Markkanen at the three, would that work? And it's just been, when Mobley's been active, he's playing 38 minutes. He's been legitimately one of the most impactful defensive players in the league. He is currently defending, like, look at some of the hustle stats at NBA.com. His contested shots per game at 12.5 are the second most or third most in the NBA. But like, he's contesting every sort of shot. He's contesting 4 3-pointers per game. He's contesting like 8.5 2-point shots per game. He's obviously contesting and blocking shots at the rim. He has been fantastic in every aspect. He's facilitating a little bit. Like, you see a lot of lobs going to Garland and Jared Allen. A lot of them come from Evan Mobley as well. His touch around the basket with his hook shots has been great. And if he starts to get a little bit more presence in the 3-point game and obviously kind of, you know, puts on some more muscle, he's going to be awesome for the next 10, 15 years. Yeah. And the Cavs defensively, they've been one of the best defensive teams in basketball. Jared Allen's been a huge reason why. Then Evan Mobley's been the other huge reason why. You look at Cleveland this year, the best starting, best five, unit in the NBA in terms of opponent effective field goal percentage and the lowest effective field goal percentage, it's Cleveland. It's Garland, Lamar Stevens, Markkanen, Mobley, and Jared Allen. And they're also top 15 with Sexton in that lineup and top 20 with Okoro in that same lineup. So Mobley's been the constant. Obviously, Garland and Jared Allen are borderline all-star players, but Evan Mobley in his rookie season. Cade Cunningham can do whatever he wants, but at the end of the day, Cleveland's playing... They've been the surprise team in the league, and Evan Mobley, barring injury, will win this award. And it's weird, man. It's weird to see Cleveland without LeBron in the headlines.
Well, he'll be back. Don't worry.
I don't want him back.
I'm kidding. But yeah, Zach, anything to add on? Anything Adam brought home?
Man, I can't top anything that he said. Right, but I second cool. it, and both of us yeah. do, right? He's been great. Yeah, so yeah, yeah. I'm happy for Adam.
Yeah, I think, you know, dude, up until
my teams are on the rise, man.
They are.
Yeah. Yeah,
I do like the Phillies, Flyers, yeah. though, and they stink. So,
and you're a Phillies fan.
Yeah, they have made the playoffs in 10 years.
So let's move on. This is a fun, most improved player. I think this is an award that I think can go a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I was kicking the tires between three: Darius Garland, Miles Bridges, and ultimately went with Ja Morant. If Ja Morant won't win MVP. But I think it would be a massive slight if he doesn't win an award this season, besides being what should be at the very worst second team all NBA. You look at Ja Morant this season relative to last year, everyone knew he was going to be a superstar. Like last year, you could make the case he was on the cusp of superstardom. He's arrived now, averaging over 5 more points per game, nearly 5% better from the field, from the free throw line, nearly 3% better from the field. Over 5% better from three on more volume than last year. He's shooting 4.2 threes a game, nearly 5% more usage rate. With all this added usage and touches, his turnover rate has gone down. He already has 2.7 offensive win share, this season. That's 1.1 more than all of last season. Granted, obviously, the Grizzlies, who we will talk more about later, are third in the West at 31-15. Even with Ja Morant missing 11 games this season, he has by far and away been the engine that has driven this team. He's stepped up against really tough competition. He's held his own on the defensive end, and he continues to impress night in and night out. He gets better almost every day.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking for a way to not pick Ja here.
I know. It's because hard. It's really hard.
Like, I think we're going to talk about him. As you said, we're going to at least touch on him when we talk MVP in a little bit. And it was kind of Darius Garland, Miles Bridges. I thought you brought those guys up as your alternates. They were also the other two guys I was looking at. I tried my hardest to get DeJounte Murray in there, but I think he's a clear fourth.
Yeah,
you could make an argument that he could be above one of those other two guys, but even comparing Garland and Bridges to the increases you just talked about with Ja Morant and his standing in the league, like, I think it's pretty clearly Ja. Like, I could make an argument for Darius Garland kind of being the same player, just stepping into more opportunity, and Miles Bridges has actually declined in a few statistical categories, and Ja Morant just across the board. The fact that his improvement is also coming along with the team rising to near the top of the West at this point, I think it's pretty clearly Ja.
Yeah, I think the biggest eye pop, you know, as I was going through this, I was looking, okay, you know, his usage rates increasing, touches are skyrocketing, efficiency's going up. I was like, this guy has to be averaging more. The fact that he's averaging less, he's playing better with the ball. He's averaging less turnovers per game is insane. Adam, do you differ at all? Are you going Darius Garland here?
So for most improved, I definitely struggle a lot because, like, a lot of the players that I have in this category to win this award are second year players. And I feel like it's tough giving that award to a sophomore because naturally they're going to improve. So Ja in his third year definitely makes sense as probably the most logical option. But his teammate, again, second year player, but Desmond Bain. I mean, Desmond Bain shooting pretty much the same from the field and a little bit worse from three, but obviously, and again, you could make the case similar to what Joe said about Garland. It's just more opportunities because everybody's been out, but 9 points per game last year in 22 and a half minutes, 17, almost 18 points per game this year in 29 minutes. I think Bane could be in consideration, but it is tough when you have Ja, who's obviously going to be in consideration for this award on that same team. Bridges definitely is interesting. Like Joe mentioned, I believe he's shooting like a lot worse efficiency wise from three. But Bridges, it was nice to see. And we saw it like the beginning of his career was okay. He's going to catch some lobs and post drive somebody and have the best broadcast team in the NBA lose their mind. And again, Joe, I agree. They need to be at the All-Star weekend. But he's done a little bit of everything, right? He's facilitating more this year. He's obviously expanding his range from three. So I think it's pretty clear the players that we mentioned, Ja, Bane, Bridges, and Garland. It is tough though. I'm trying to think of like a third, fourth year player that's taken a step. I mean, he won't win the award. He probably shouldn't even be in consideration. DeMar DeRozan's having the best season of his career. Like, I don't think at this point you say DeMar DeRozan's the most improved player because DeRozan's always been a borderline top 25 player in the NBA. But I'm just trying to is there any like veteran? I'm not talking like 10, 11 year player, but you know, fourth year player, fifth year player. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to find because I don't love giving it to a second year player.
So I'm looking at the betting odds. Ja Morant -190. Second favorite is Miles Bridges +600, Darius Garland +1200. So we're running that. DeJounte +1700, fourth.
He's fourth.
Yep. Nice. Then you have Desmond Bane and LaMelo tied at 40-1.
Again, LaMelo, like, I don't think LaMelo's I think LaMelo's the same player.
I agree. Adam, you talk about fourth, fifth year players and beyond. The only one within like the top 7 to 10 is Jared Allen at 45-1.
And again, and like Kyle Jared Kuzma Allen.
At 100-1.
Jared Allen, Kuzma's a good one, I think.
Kuzma's stock, like, Kuzma's 100-1 right now. He will not win this award. Unless, you know, knock on wood, unless something happens to Ja Morant or some of the guys ahead of him. But 100-1 is a bit disrespectful.
Unfortunately for Kyle Kuzma, it's a season long award and not a 2 week award.
Right.
Correct. I will say he has been much improved for the majority of the season, but these last 2 to 3 weeks have been like earth scorching.
You know who can make a run?
27-13 a game.
You know who's a dark horse to make a run for both sixth man and most improved? It's not going to happen most likely, and he's banged up right now. But he was very, very frustrated with his role on the Atlanta Hawks, and now he's going to be the sixth man in New York. Cam Reddish. Don't sleep.
Yeah. Another good one that's 100-1 who has probably plummeted over the last few weeks is Cole Anthony. I think he was probably one of the favorites, but his play has taken a pretty sharp decline lately. Not awful, just not nearly the level it was for the first 6 weeks of the season. So let's move on to Coach of the Year. So Adam and I consensus voted Taylor Jenkins. Zach, you have a list of four guys, Jenkins being one of them. What's the thing? It's got to be the only four guys in the running right now, obviously, besides Mike Budenholzer. But Taylor Jenkins, Memphis, they're in the West, 31 and 15. The biggest, obviously, this team, John Morant, is the catalyst and the engine that drives it, like I said. But 9-2 without him speaks very highly of their coaching. I think they've been brilliant on both sides of the ball, which obviously comes down to Taylor Jenkins. But Zach, why don't you, because Adam and I have the same answer, hit on some other guys that you think are worthy of consideration. Because I think right now, let me go to the betting odds. I think one of the guys that you have, Billy Donovan. Oh, wow. Hold on. These odds are weird. Monty Williams, the favorite, which makes sense. I think the Suns have, what, 9 losses in the year?
Yeah, 34-9.
Yeah, but so why don't you run through the list that you have and just a brief point or two on each of them?
Yeah, I didn't actually write down Monty. I did take a look and see that he was the favorite. And I think right now, like if the season ended today, you have to give it to him because they're 3 games clear of the other 29 or 3 games clear of the other 29 teams.
Right. Yeah, that's insane at this point.
And to your point about the 9-2 Grizzlies without Ja Morant, that is a testament to Coach Jenkins, but I also think it's a testament to their front office and how they've built this team. Like we go back to the offseason, the JV for Funaki trade and some other pieces was kind of widely poo-pooed. I think even by I was kind of like, well, why are we making that trade? But I think it's panned out really well for them. And we talked about Desmond Bane a few minutes ago. That's one of the best draft picks in the last couple of years in terms of value. So certainly not, you know, like you said, Jenkins is on my list here. Billy Donovan makes it for me. Again, this is just an award, you know, when we do the mid-season show here, it's, I think this is like the fun part of it is to debate the awards that aren't decided yet. And as if they're going to finish number one in the East, which like we've said is more competitive this season, that would bring Billy Donovan to me kind of even with Monty Williams. And then we could have a debate about which one seed was more impressive. You know, we've talked about how the Bulls have missed every important piece in their rotation for extended time at one point or another so far this season. And the fact that they're still sitting above everybody else in the East at 27-15 is really impressive. Other two guys I wanted to bring up was Eric Spoelstra, kind of in a similar situation where they've missed, I think, pretty much everybody that's important for an extended period of time. I think outside of Tyler Hero, I don't think he's really missed a ton of time, but the fact that the Heat are technically, I guess, they're one game back in the loss column and one game up in the win column on the Bulls. So they're like,
dude, we talked about Toronto last episode. I don't want to play a healthy Miami team.
No.
I mean, Joe does because they just don't match up with Milwaukee well ever.
Yeah.
No, but that's, I mean, in theory,
a little bit,
but like, if there's any team that matches up well with the Heat and knows how to beat it, it's the Bucks.
And so I think Spoelstra has got to be in the mix at this point of the year. You can't write him off because if they finish the. If they finish the one seed, like you have to talk about them. And then kind of a similar argument for JB Bickerstaff in terms of where the Cavs are sitting now, a game and a half out of the one seed is insane. Like we were talking about it like it was cute a month into the
season. We really were. It was like, all right.
But now, like they're even better now, I feel like, and they've lost some of the most important players, specifically Rubio and obviously losing Colin Sexton. You know, you would like to have them available at least. So I think Bickerstaff has to be in the mix just as like the candidate, like even if they finish just in the top four in the East, I think he has to be in the mix at the end of the year. So this is just one of the awards I was more excited to discuss because there's so many different ways it can go.
Yeah, I agree. Adam, do you have any other takeaways? I know you wrote Taylor Jenkins down as your choice.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with, I think right now, like everybody that Zach mentioned should be the top candidates, but I think personally it should be between, at least right now, Billy Donovan and Taylor Jenkins. Obviously, the difference for me is like Chicago had hype around them, maybe not to this extent of being this good. And Memphis, we knew they had a ton of young talent, but what they've done, not just overall, but like Joe mentioned, 9-2 without Ja Morant during that 11 game stretch. And it's not like it's just been Ja Morant when he's been healthy. Like, we're seeing them get, like I said, a massive breakout season from Desmond Bane. De'Anthony Melton is a good player. Brandon Clark off the bench. I mean, they're getting random 17 rebounding games from John Conchar. Like everybody that has a rotation spot on this team, Kyle Anderson, like everybody is not just like, okay, they're doing their job. They're just, spacing it out for job. Like, they're legitimately contributing at a massive rate. Like, so to me, that's telling of the job that the, front office and Taylor Jenkins have done. Tyus Jones is one of the more underrated backup point guards in the entire NBA.
I think he's one of the best backup point guards.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just think not just having Ja Morant, but I thought the Steven Adams addition, how he meshes well in the pick and roll, and how, he's a very underrated passing center. And everybody that they have. And like, we saw a stretch when Steven Adams is out where Jaren Jackson Jr. was playing really, really good basketball. Yep. Like, if he clicks and gets consistent and really breaks out, this team could be the one seed. Like, they have that much depth. And I think
and
that's
Dylan
testament
Brooks
to the,
hasn't even played right. in almost a month. Like, yeah.
And,
it's
yeah.
Scary.
And like, I think it's just a testament to definitely Taylor Jenkins, but it's also the front office and general management, because this team really, like, they're deep.
Yeah, I agree. I think I do. Billy Donovan's probably my second choice here. I think for me, like, Monty Williams, I understand. Like, they are just storming through the regular season, but that was kind of almost the expectation for Phoenix, especially after last year. I think I underestimated how the ceiling for the, I will be the first to admit I underestimated the ceiling for the Bulls this year. I think I had them at the sixth seed. I said their ceiling was like the five. I think that was a way too conservative. I will go back and admit I was wrong there. Billy Donovan's been great with this team. Like you said, Zach, like, they right now are without Lonzo and Zach LaVine. DeMar missed some time. Vucevic missed some time. Caruso's missed a lot of time. Patrick Williams went down. He's out for the year. Mm-hmm. Derrick Jones has been out of the lineup more
often. Also, they've lost four straight. So they are starting to, I guess, take on a little water with these injuries.
Yeah, they are. But they've also tread water for a long time with them as well. So this is some expected regression, but they're still, I think they're performing to where they should be. I don't necessarily, I'm not saying you're saying this, but I don't think they're overperforming by any means.
Well, they lost four in a row and they're still in first. So that shows you how good they have been.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. The East, speaking of stands, the East is going to be very fun come April. Mm-hmm. So let's move on. Before we hit disappointment of the season, we're going to go MVP. I'll get mine out of the way. Zach wants to go last just to cherry pick one of us, I assume.
No, I have narratives.
Yeah. Giannis is my pick, and I like take my bias out of it. Like, I really tried. We talked about it before we hopped in. I got on the recording. There's not many candidates for this award right now. Kevin Durant is out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. James Harden has been, when I say bad, I don't mean bad. He's been bad relative to the preseason expectations. You have Steph Curry, who is the betting favorite right now, but having arguably his worst statistical season in almost the last 7 to 8 years. I think right now, I think Steph's stock is driven not only by the Warriors' record, but also the narrative around him, like him breaking the all-time three-point record and the media hype around him this season, I think plays a big part. But at the end of the day, and I don't rely solely on like the Kia MVP ladder or Basketball References MVP rankings, but they are typically pretty damn accurate. Giannis, number one in the Kia MVP ladder, number two in the Basketball Reference tracker. He's a 1A for me to Nikola Jokic, is 1B. Giannis, second in the league behind Jokic in player efficiency rating. Giannis has dealt with injuries himself this year. The Bucks have dealt with injuries in COVID this year. He right now averaging 20.5 points, 11.2 rebounds, 6.1 assists, a block and a half, and a steal per game. Over 60% from the free throw line, which is not a great number, but it is an improvement as to where he came from. And the big thing with me for Giannis is these free throws he's hitting them when you need them to. Like, the Bucks did not win on Tuesday against the Hawks. They blew the game. But when Giannis was at the line with less than a minute left, he hit his free throws. This was never something we saw. And then he went 17 for 17 from the line or whatever in game six of the finals. And arguably one of the best finals performances ever. And that monkey is off his back.
Talk he about has, come bucket.
Dear Lord, here we go. God. he has at the been incrementally better than last season. He is also the leader in Kia's defensive player of the year ladder right now, which just
give him all the awards in.
Caters to his MVP stock. My only deterrent for Giannis is just the politics of the NBA. Will they want to give him three of four over the last 4 years? If they don't give him defensive player of the year, which I think will be Draymond, I think that actually benefits his MVP stock because they're not going to give him both, whether you think he deserves it or not. So Giannis is my pick for MVP, assuming his play continues. The Bucks' better record than the Nuggets right now is really the key differentiator for me. So Adam, take it away.
All right, let me make the case for Evan Mobley.
Shut up.
I'm leaning. So I'm the same way, pretty much. It's a 1A, 1B, but I'm going to make the case for Jokic.
Okay.
He obviously won the award last year. His numbers right now are pretty much on par. You know, last year was 26.5 points per game. This year it's 25.5. Shooting exactly identical from the field, 56.6%. Shooting a little bit worse from three this year, but still 36% for a 7 foot center is pretty impressive. 7.5 assists down from 8.3, but Denver has been depleted. No Jamal Murray all year. Michael Porter with the back issue. Will Barton's been in and out of the lineup. There have been so many games this year where Jokic's second best player or best player alongside him has been Jeff Green, has been Bones Highland. And Denver's right. I mean, are they going to win the West? Most likely not. Probably definitely not. But they're six in the West right now. They're 22-20. And I know the West has been underwhelming. The Lakers have underwhelmed. The Clippers have been without Paul George. Portland has been depleted injury-wise and Lillard and McCollum being out. But still, like, I think the fact that they are even above 500, given the injuries they've had, he is single-handedly carrying this team. And as amazing as Giannis is, he's one of the three best players in the NBA, maybe the best player in the NBA. If you take Giannis off Milwaukee, and we're not counting, you know, teams being depleted by COVID, that team's still a top six or seven team in the East. If you take Jokic off this Denver team right now, they're the worst team in the NBA. Like,
that's fair.
I just think that's what it comes down to for me. But it's true. Like, the MVP race, and it was similar last year where it was like, oh, it's between Embiid and Harden and then Jokic. And then, like, Embiid got hurt and Harden got hurt. And we're starting to see that now. It's Jokic and Giannis. LeBron's playing out of his mind, but the Lakers are underwhelming. Durant's hurt. Curry was the clear favorite, you know, a month and a half into the season, but he's really been on a little bit of a slump.
I think, I'll be honest, I think that Curry's been in a slump all season. I really do. Like, he has not been
all great. All season?
Almost all. Like, he has had
good spurts. To start the year.
He was, yeah, the first 2.5 weeks of the season, he was great.
Yeah.
I think what Joe means, and I think this is where he's coming from. Mm-hmm. When we look at Curry from like a fantasy perspective, he's been like pretty up and down in terms of like 60 points one game, then down to 30. Like, it's been oddly not as consistent. And maybe that's why it look, but I agree. Like, lately he's 100% been in a slump. Like, that's not the, that's, you know, you can't deny that.
Mm-hmm.
So Jokic is my pick. I wonder who's, I don't know if Zach's just going to Jokic or Giannis or if he has somebody else. I will say, though, and we're it's becoming more and more evident, and I want to get your guys' take. We talked about him a lot in this episode. Is John consideration now with Durant out and some of these other players out? And then Joel Embiid, we didn't talk about either. Joel Embiid's playing out of his mind right now, and a similar situation as Jokic. Take him off the Sixers right now, they might be worse than Denver. I mean, like...
Yeah, I think so. I don't have a pick right now.
That's perfectly fair, too, by the way.
Yeah, I have, and it's a good thing we're only 34 minutes into this pod because I have eight people to discuss. I think there's eight people that can legitimately win this, and Ja is in there.
Yeah.
But I'll just start from the top of my list. And I think there's certain things that need to happen for all of these guys, but some of them more realistic than others. First with Steph, we already talked about him. I think getting his shooting back up to where he was to start the season. I mean, this guy's had 17 games over 20 points. He's got 8 games in the 30s, 4 40-point games and a 50-point game this year. Obviously carrying the Warriors kind of in tandem with Draymond, but without Klay, keeping them at the top of the West until very recently. You know, if he gets that shooting back up, you know, if he starts shooting above 40% again, I think he's down to 38.5. But on the highest volume per game, 12.8 attempts from three in his career, 91.5 from the free throw line. He's been fantastic. If he gets that shooting back up and the Warriors finish first in the West, I think that's the argument for Steph at the end of the season. I think with Giannis, for him to win it at the end and again, overcome, like Joe said, just kind of the how the NBA works with these awards.
Yeah,
you have to you have to win the one seed. How competitive the East is, if the Bucks pull it together, and they're, you know, all this these other teams we're talking about at the top here, the Bucks are 2 games out of the one, so it's completely doable if they're able to finish in the one seed. I think that's how Giannis can win it. Again, I think he'd probably need some help. He'd need a couple other guys to fall off. Jokic, to Adam's point, I think if they can climb above Dallas, I don't think they can break into the top four without something crazy happening, this team being 6 games out of the 4 seed right now. The Nuggets are the 6 seed. So I think even if they're in the 6 seed, like if this team doesn't have to play in the play-in game, how they're constructed with all the guys out, like, I think Jokic has a case then to go back to back. It's just amazing what he's doing. I know we've, you know, talked about him a ton, but he's shooting 57% from the field, 36 from three, a little bit down in terms of his free throw numbers. But I would argue that he's having to do so goddamn much for this team that he's tired when he gets to the line.
And we didn't talk about it. Yeah. Like, Jokic is like not even the same stratosphere defensively as Joel Embiid. He's been better this year.
He's gotten a lot better.
He's still. It's not someone you say Jokic is in the paint, you know, patrolling. Let's not go to the rim. You're still attacking the rim, but he's definitely been better, and that helps.
Yeah. I mean, 25 points, career high 14 boards. This guy averages 10 boards per game in his career. He's at 14 this year and 7.5 assists. Yeah, I think if they get the 5 seed, it's going to be tough for me not to make my vote at the end of the season for Jokic for keeping this team afloat. Like, we know the West is weaker this year, but to finish in the top 5 with this team would be an amazing feat, in my opinion. So that's Jokic's case. I think KD is still in the mix. Obviously, he's going to miss some time here. But if the Nets crater and fall, like, dude, the 10 seed is 5 games back of them. So, like, if they crater and go down to the 8, 9, 10 spot without him, and then he comes back and they get back into the top 3, mm-hmm. Like, that's, I think, that's the case for KD. If they stay afloat without him, I think his MVP case is out the door. But he's still in the mix, depending on how the narrative goes over the next 4 weeks. Ja Morant, I think the Grizzlies need to finish top 2. And I think a lot of these other narratives that I'm talking about need to not happen for him to actually get the MVP. But, you know, it's definitely not out of the question. I think LeBron has to still be considered.
I agree. I think because the Lakers can climb the standings a bit.
Especially if LeBron finish scoring.
Top 4.
That's LeBron, what I have written down. They have to be top four.
If they finish top 4,
yeah,
I think LeBron is going to be a finalist at the very least.
For top 4 would require them to have to pass the Jazz, because I think Dallas and Denver are absolutely viable and realistic to pass. Yeah. Utah will be tough, but LeBron scoring, I mean, 29 points per game, I think, or 28 points per game. He scored over at least 25 real points in 10 straight.
I believe.
Yeah, who's first? Durant, right?
Yep.
Dude, when's the last time both LeBron and Durant
I want to say 2008, I think it was.
I mean, they've been a disappointment, and we might talk about them in a minute, but, like, LeBron scoring, and like Zach and Joe said, like, they get up to top 4, given that the disappointment already we've seen. And besides, LeBron hasn't won in a while, so the media and the voters might say, you know what? How many bonus points did you get for being 38 years old, too?
Yeah, I mean, dude, making up 7 games, the deficit between them and the 4th place Utah Jazz right now, in the last 38, that would be a Herculean effort. Obviously, he would get some help from Anthony Davis coming back in that scenario. You think you need the Brow back to really make that climb, but just for him keeping them, you know, in the mix here to be in the top six and not have to play in the play-in with how bad that team has been overall. We've seen him elevate his play from a statistical standpoint, and I think you have to give him a lot of credit. I know I'm not the only one years ago who was thinking LeBron's going to end up being a center. I think we saw a glimpse of that clearly when they're healthy. Anthony Davis will be the five, but I think down the road in the waning years of his career, we may see him play five, like, kind of consistently without the help of an injury to a guy like an Anthony Davis. And the last two on my list here, Luka Doncic, similar to the Lakers, they are four games back of the Jazz.
Joe
shakes his head.
Well, no, okay. Statistically, Luka is playing like we expect Luka.
Here's what happens, Zach.
I think the Mavericks are fucking buns.
Well, here's what happened. Who was the clear cut number one choice preseason last year when MVP?
Luka. Yeah,
Luka. Everybody chose Luka, and he underwhelmed a little bit. And I think that's why every single game now, it's like, damn, Luka's having a bad year. And you look at the stat lines, it's like he's having a fantastic year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, outside of him, again, I think like we touched on, it was either a stream or the last pod, his three-point percentage looks like Russell Westbrook right now. But everything else, like the bar for Luka Doncic as a 22-year-old is just so – it's maybe higher
than – astronomical.
Anybody we've seen since LeBron, right? Like,
yeah, 25, not playing.
Still 25. Still, we can get to Zion later. 25 points, 9 assists, 9 rebounds, over a steal per game. If they push into the top four with this roster, like you were talking about it with your buddies on the last pod last week, right? Like, this team sucks.
It's
and
awful.
The fact that they're the five seed, though. They're six games above 500, and Luka's been playing hurt. Porzingis has been on and off the floor. They dealt with their own COVID struggles. If they catch up, they're four games back of the Jazz. If they get in the top four, Luka would need some help from these other narratives not coming true. But I think he's still in the mix here halfway through the season. The last guy is James Harden, the opposite narrative of Kevin Durant. If the Nets soar with KD out behind Harden's play and grab the one seed, then I think Harden really enters the conversation. But I can see all of those eight guys at the end of the year, to various degrees, ending up with the MVP trophy.
A lot of obviously contingencies on these guys. So James Harden right now, 80-1 to an MVP.
I mean, we were talking about him preseason, right?
That was my one MVP future. I actually bet it was James Harden 25-1. Mm-hmm. Which if he was 25-1 now, I'd be like, you know what? Like, given Durant being out for 4 to 6 weeks, I would take a flyer on that. So I'm still clinging to hope. Obviously, a lot of contingencies need to go according to plan, but not out of the question.
I have real quick on Curry.
40-1, which makes no sense.
Yeah, real quick on Curry. We talked about how he's struggling shooting a little bit lately. I think I found the answer. Steph Curry, you know, huge part of his game, pretty much all of his game, not all of his game, but a huge, you know, way he scores off screens and off handoffs, right? Last season, Steph Curry shot an absurd 48.5% off handoffs, led the league in handoff points per game. This year, he's shooting 30% off handoffs. So 48.5 to 30. So I feel like once, and that's still a huge part of Golden State's offense.
Yeah.
Probably going to correct itself a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's move on. Very opposite topic here. Disappointment of the season. I'm going to get out of the way right now. The chalk disappointment is the Lakers. I'm not going to talk about them. I'm practicing self-control. I've talked enough podcasts about he who shall not be named, so I'm not going to talk about it. My disappointment of the season so far is the Atlanta Hawks, the team that was two wins away from making the NBA Finals last year. They right now sit at 12th in the East, 18-25. And there are only two teams in the entire NBA who have a worse defensive rating than the Atlanta Hawks, and that is the Houston Rockets and the Portland Trail Blazers, both on historically bad defensive paces. I have been giving my flowers to Trae Young this season, and I will continue to. By no means is he an MVP candidate because of how bad this team has been. He is a liability defensively, and I understand that. This Hawks team is a liability defensively. They have Clint Capela to protect the rim, and they have DeAndre Hunter when he's on the court on the perimeter, and that is really about it. regardless of that, they somehow sit 12th in the East. While despite having the third worst defensive rating, had the second best offensive rating in the league, only behind only the Utah Jazz. Their net rating of minus 1.2 is behind very mediocre teams like the New York Knicks, the Indiana Pacers, and the supposed to be tanking San Antonio Spurs. Zach, you're shaking your head because they have not remembered the assignment.
What was they played Monday, right? And they lost, right? I think it was another huge. It was like
they were up on Phoenix all game, and then pulled out the loss.
It came across on Twitter. It was like DeJounte Murray has great line and Spurs lost, and that's like that is the headline of Zach's dreams right there. Like yeah. Murray balls out and the Spurs lose. Like it's exactly what he wants.
Yeah, I mean, I just think you look at one of my big issues I have with teams that underperform is the talent gap usually isn't massive. Like you look at a team like, let's say New Orleans, for example, bottom tier team. Brandon Ingram's great. They have some talent, but they don't have enough where you think they should be a playoff team. It's almost inexcusable. Like the amount of talent Atlanta has to be 18-25 at 12th in the East. Not just Trae Young, John Collins, who they just gave a max extension to. Clint Capella, one of the best rim protectors in the NBA. Bogdan Bogdanović has been nothing but a bust for them in 2 years. He's barely been on the court. I'm very underwhelmed by this team. They are on the outside of the play-in looking in, and as tight as the Eastern Conference is right now, they are. The problem is they're 3.5 games behind the Knicks in 11th. They're 4 games behind the Celtics in 10th. And they are 9.5 games behind the one right now. So as tight as this conference is, it starts to widen with the Hawks. I think they have been nothing but disappointing this season.
Yeah, and I'm staying in the East. This is a team that I've been really high on for the last like 3 years. Like they can make a quiet run in the East. They have a loaded, they have a really good overall roster. And that's the Pacers. Like they've missed, Brogdon's missed time with the Achilles, but like LaVert's been pretty bad. Like LaVert's had a couple splash games and then just completely disappears. The constants have been Miles Turner, who's we didn't talk about in Defensive Player of the Year, probably will be in that mix. I think he still leads the NBA in blocks per game. He pretty much always will. Sabonis has been, when everybody's healthy, his numbers have been down a little bit, mostly in the assists. He's still a top, tier player in the league, top 30 player, whatever. He's great. But they've been just overall very underwhelming. I think they're 13th in the East right now. And it's like, you can say, okay, yeah, but a lot of players have missed time. At what point is it just like that's been every team in the NBA this year. Like the Toronto Raptors have been worse in terms of missing players than the Pacers. And yet they're 21-20. They're 9th in the East. Like they're still, afloat. So for the Pacers to be 15-29, 8-22 in the conference, 3-17 on the road. They are 3-17 on the road.
Dear Lord.
That's so bad. Like, the Pistons are 3-18 on the road. The Magic are 6-21. Like, you don't want to be in the same category as two teams that have no desire to win. And the Pacers probably will get to that point where they're just trying to lose games maybe in a month or so. But the entire first half of the season, they were not trying to lose games. It just kind of looked like, for a lot of it. So they've been massively underwhelming. And then if the injuries didn't happen, I wanted to see what Damian Lillard would have done if he stayed healthy, because he was very underwhelming the first, bit of the season. But obviously he's dealing with the abdomen injury, probably won't play the rest of the season. So I'm going with the Pacers, though. Like I've been, I look at their starting five, right? Brogdon, LaVert, Turner, Sabonis, whoever they put there. And it's like, that's a good starting five. That's probably one of the better starting fives on paper in basketball. And just they've just been terrible.
In a similar fashion about Boston. I think Boston and Indy, they just kind of epitomize mediocrity in the NBA. And they have way too much talent to do that. So, Zach, before we head out of here, I'll pass it to you for your disappointment of the season.
Yeah, so I got a team and a player here.
Go for it.
And I think the team, I'm not sure we've ever talked about on this podcast, at least in recent memory, and a player that I'm kind of wondering about. The team is the Orlando Magic. They're a disappointment because I don't think any of us expected them to make even the play-in game this year. Like, that was not the goal for this team. It was, get all these young guys together, see what we've got, and kind of form the new direction for the franchise. But sitting at 8-37, like you had to, as a Magic fan, a member of the front office, have higher hopes than that for all the talent, like just the raw talent that you have on this team. I mean, they've got 9 guys that were picked in the first round. A lot of them, the majority of them, lottery picks since 2017. 6 of them picked by the Magic and 3 of them acquired through trades. Those guys through trades, RJ Hampton, who was the 24th pick last year. Wendell Carter Jr., who was the 7th pick in 2018. Obviously, Markelle Fultz, we know his kind of saga through Philly and his trip to Orlando now and getting the contract after playing well last year, then getting hurt again. The first pick in 2017. But out of their draft picks recently, John Isaac, 2017, 6th overall pick. Mo Bamba, 2018, 6th overall pick. The 2 picks this year, Suggs at 5, Franz Wagner at 8, Cole Anthony last year at 15, Chuma Okeke, 2019, at the 16th pick. The fact that you have, I know John Isaac has been playing, Markelle Fultz has been playing, and they've had some COVID issues, this and that, but to be 3.5 games worse than the rest of the league, I don't think was the goal, right? Like, they would be much more happy to have that 15-29 record, I think, is something that they envisioned more, and certainly in that front office, you know, new coach Jamal Mosley. They've just been like, again, I know we didn't expect anything out of them, but I think that's why it's even more worrisome that we're
getting less than nothing out of them.
Yeah, yeah. They're like single digit wins 43 games in. Like, I don't care if you're tanking or not. Like, the Houston Rockets are very clearly tanking. They have 13 wins. Like, they went on that long win streak, and you've seen flashes of KPJ, you know, throwing out the locker room stuff. Like, Christian Wood has been good.
Is your player disappointment on the Houston Rockets?
No, he's not.
I was going to say, I would argue Jalen Green's been a massive disappointment. They're still winning games.
I agree. I mean, that was my rookie of the year pick when we did our preseason.
It was my pick.
Now he is... Out of all the guys that we've he's been last and not even in the conversation. Like, he has no shot.
Right. But just proving your point, he's been a massive disappointment. And at least Houston's still winning 13, 14 games.
Yeah. And he's been in and out of the lineup as well. And they have other guys that really dominate the ball there. So, you know, there's just nobody on Orlando. Like, we've sung Cole Anthony's praises. Franz Wagner has been good, but like, it's not turning into wins. And out of all those other guys, like, who are we confident that we're signing long-term? And yeah, like, when Suggs has been active, he hasn't been great. And like, I think a lot of people were
better than Jalen Green.
Yeah.
They just need to trade Cleveland Terrence Ross and then they can do whatever they want.
Exactly. And I just think it's like, if you're Orlando, you don't have a lot of clarity outside of we're not re-signing Gary Harris. So that $20 million coming off the books is nice, but you've got decisions to make coming up on RJ Hampton on his, I mean, they're team options. You're probably going to pick them up, but like, you're going to have high draft picks coming in too, right? Like, so how are we going to make room and how are those guys going to fit? Like, at some point you've got to make a bigger move here. Trade some of these young guys to another team, maybe that's trying. I don't really know what you do. I just think Orlando is still stuck in whatever the lower level to no man's land is where Orlando is. So like, not that their fans have had really anything to be happy about since Dwight left, but like, I just feel like you're in a worse spot than you were at the beginning of the season. Like, any hope you had, it, like, has to be out the window at this point. And then my player is a guy who we haven't seen yet. It's Zion Williamson. And I just think the fact that we talked about it more in the early season pods, but the fact that whether it's him not taking care of his body or if it's just biological where he's so heavy and he's such a physical specimen, so unique that he can't stay healthy, whatever it is, it's a disappointment. And it's a disappointment for fans who want to see him play, like us three. It's a disappointment for the New Orleans fan base, the New Orleans franchise. Like, this was a team before it was announced that he was having issues again that I think expected to make the playoffs. And I think all of us expected them to at least compete for a playoff spot. And the fact that they're tied with San Antonio, who is clearly trying to win at this point, but like aren't because they suck. Like, New Orleans sucks. And they would be a better team with Zion, who last year, 27 points, 7 boards, 4 assists, a steal and a block, 61% from the floor. That could really help this team. And so him being out is just holding back a franchise that needs wins, like, honestly, to stay in New Orleans or to attract another city to take them. Like, he needs to be healthy. And like, I don't know, man. I also think, like, when he comes back, like, because we think, like, you think he's going to come back this season, right? We're getting to the point where it's a conversation.
I really don't know.
It sucks.
Yeah. Like I legit, when I say I don't know, I do not have a lean one way or another. Like, I would say no.
Like, I think why? We all forget, how funny he is to fucking watch.
I agree. But at this point, it's by far a lost season for New Orleans. Like, you now have to think a lot longer term and bigger picture, whether you think he's going to stay in New Orleans or not after his rookie deal. Is it worth rushing him back and potentially risking something? Like, because that would then be the nail in the coffin for your franchise for the next 5 years.
You know what the rumors are starting to be now, right?
What? Him going to the Knicks.
You're Reddish damn right.
Barrett.
You're damn right.
Yeah. Barrett, yeah. Well, you know he wants to play there.
By the way, I think that's actually in play. So,
I don't think it's out of play whatsoever. I think if that's the case, I don't know if Julius Randle will be there anymore. But yeah, I mean,
right. I don't think you can send Julius back to the Pelicans.
That'd no. I'm saying, yeah, no, yeah, that'd be really fucked up. Zion has what, 1 year? This is second year, so he has 1 year left of his rookie deal, right?
I think he has two options.
I thought it was one and then an option, but maybe I'm
it's
wrong.
You're right. Next year is the last option. Already exercised $13.5 million next year. I just don't know. Like, a team's gonna have to give at least 3 firsts, maybe more, for Zion at this point, right? Yeah. And like, the Pelicans do have assets from the Lakers, the Anthony Davis trade. I think they still have picks, right, from the Drew Holiday trade. Yep. Like, you're either like, there's so many ways this could go, and I just hope it ends with Zion being healthy and having a lengthy career. But like, the Pelicans are at a crossroads, because if he can come back at the end of this year, I think you push him to do that. Because you need to show that he's healthy and can play basketball, so you can move him if you want to in the summer for that giant package and start the full rebuild. But I just, I just want to see him back on the court, man.
He was just dominant last year. It was so stupid. Like, he was legitimately shooting 80% from the field in games. Like, oh yeah, that's sustainable. And you weren't even really being sarcastic.
The frustration that Adam and I express on a nightly basis as to why he wasn't fucking getting rebounds was the only.
But it made up for it because he was handling the ball more and Lonzo was spotting up. So you were seeing more like 6 assist games, and he was scoring 35 real points on 15 of 19 shooting. So it was like.
And getting to the line, because you can't stop him.
No.
He was 4th in free throw attempts last year, 8th in field goal percentage. 15th in offensive rebounds.
He was first in field goal attempts per game in the restricted area.
Yeah.
Like, that is, again, that's comparing players like Rudy Gobert, Clint Capella, Jared Allen. Like, he was first. It was nuts. Disappointing for sure. A bit of a different vein in that regard, but I agree.
Yeah.
If you had to pick a player real quick before you're out of here, Joe, that's actually played this year, it's been disappointing, who would you pick? I have two players that stand out. One, he's had a fine season. He's on a very good team. But if you look at his numbers, Vucevic is kind of underwhelmed this year a bit. He's missing a lot more open shots. Post-up numbers are down. And it's not like his points per game are obviously down, but it's not like he's still averaging like 15 field goal attempts per game. He's shooting like 31% from three, which is way down. And then the other player, and I'll take the L on this. He was like, in my opinion, the most underrated player in basketball for years. And when he signed with the Sixers, I was hype. Tobias Harris has just not delivered. He has just not delivered for Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's a good one. I do think Jalen Green is mine, especially because he was my rookie of the year pick. You look at the guards like him and Jalen Suggs, the high volume base don't offer anything defensively, and they really are just there for volume. They are the boom or bust type of guys, and Green has not been the boom more than maybe 2-3 times this season. So I think it would be Jalen Green. I think he has a future in the NBA. He just really needs to figure out his efficiency.
I mean, you've seen the skill set and his just watching him last year in the G League. I mean, my goodness. Like, there was a stretch where I was like, man, because there was a lot of talk, oh, Cleveland, he's going to be on Cleveland, even with the the way the roster was shaping up. I was like, all right, whatever, we can trade Sexton and build with, you know, Green and Garland. And so, like, there's still that opportunity, but yeah, he's definitely underwhelmed. Zach, yours was Tobias.
Yeah, if I was going to pick a player that was actually playing this year, it would be Tobias for pretty much all the reasons.
He fouled out with like 7 points the other day. Like, just
yeah,
most
he's just, and for what he's getting paid,
right?
He's a max player playing worse than players making.
It didn't help though that they had the Jimmy Butler situation where it was like they couldn't afford to wait on Butler and risk losing both players. Mm-hmm. But yeah. It's like Tobias Harris is not a max player, obviously, but it doesn't help.
And it makes
his struggles look even worse when you look at it that way and say, oh yeah, well, he's a max player. And it's just, and it sucks because I love Tobias Harris. I thought it was a great signing by Philadelphia, but yeah, I mean, it's Joel Embiid and then it's Maxey and Seth Curry. That's really it. Offensively, yeah. At least. Matisse has been great defensively per usual, but they need a lot more out of Tobias.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Well, this was fun. Obviously, we'll reconnect on a similar conversation a few months from now, but we will be back on Thursday with topics TBD. For the FTN NBA podcast, I am Joe Metz, Zach Graham, Quisenberg DFS on Twitter, Adam Pfeiffer, APfeiffer24. Go Bills, go Steelers, I guess, next year, and go Pack, go. Enjoy your night, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN NBA podcast with Adam, Joe, and Zach. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at APFeiffer24, at JMeds34, and at KweisenbergDFS. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.